Hi, welcome to Camino Talks from Follow the Camino. Today we are welcoming John Brownlee again to talk on the topic of slowing down. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon to you, Umberto.
So today, John, I wanted to talk to you about slowing down. Why that? Because I believe we have all been forced somehow to slightly less, if even a lot less than before, go less to the shop, commute less, so to slow down. And I suppose there is a strong link when you are walking the Camino, slowing down. And I wanted to have your opinion, your experience on slowing down, what that is important to people. What does it bring to your mind when we speak about slowing down?
Well, I think one of the big factors of modern life, and I think one of the things that really drives people onto the Camino, is that our life has become incredibly busy. You know, we're all in a way spun out away from our center. You know, I have this image of a sort of a one of those clothes dryers, the centrifugal force, and it sort of fires our clothes onto the outside of a drum. And it's like we're splattered on the surface of our lives, and we've lost sort of connection with any sort of deeper meaning or purpose in a way. And I think that many people find that there's a lovely quip, we are speeding up our lives and working harder in a futile attempt to slow down and enjoy it. There's this, I think nearly everybody associates with this thing that they're too busy. Oh, just give me some space, some quiet time, some downtime. And that's a very common sense that people have. Now, how in our normal life do we slow down? We've got our friends, we've got our workplace, you know, we're caught in this sort of system that fires us around the place and draws us on. It's very difficult to slow down within that environment. Now, so it's much easier to take ourselves out of a familiar environment and put ourselves on an overtly walking route, the Camino de Santiago, one of the many routes that are available to us. And there we meet like-minded people who are all maybe busy in their minds, but they're wanting to slow down. And of course, walking is incredible because you can't go walk for much more than 3 kilometers an hour. So your body slows down, and with your body slowing down, the mind slows down, everything begins to calm. So I think that that's one of the, you know, great and wonderful and unique characteristics of the Camino. It applies, of course, to all walking routes, but with the Caminos, there is this other factor built in where people are asking those bigger questions. You know, am I supposed to be, you know, running this, you know, guidebook entity? You know, and if I am, how can I do it in a less forced way?
Yeah, I suppose the difference between daily life, where most people have a car, we have means of transportation, we have trains, and on the continent maybe high-speed trains, so we have the possibility of speeding up. We can both watch TV and read the news on our smartphones, for example, doing two things at once, in actual fact. Whereas, as you were saying, when you are on the Camino, well, you're going from point A to point B, and the only powering tool you have is the pair of legs you have. And so, therefore, limiting the choice, I think, help you slow down in a way. Tell me something. Do you think that it is linked only to walking, and do you think that walking, by slowing down, enrich the journey in the sense that we can see more things at a smaller scale that we couldn't see if we're passing by on a train, for example?
Oh yes, I mean, I think everybody would experience that, and I certainly, you know, I've done the Caminos by car, you know, getting information. I've done it by bicycle. I've ridden a horse for a period of it. But there's nothing like being on a on your feet. That pace allows you to look around. You can't look around on a bike, or if you're, you know, you've got a horse, you've got to look after it. If you've got other, on your own, on your feet, you can stop and stare. You can breathe and take in the landscape. Walking is uniquely the way to travel a pilgrimage route. I really think that. Speeding through the landscape on a bicycle, you know, it can be, and you've mentioned somebody earlier who, you know, who ran it. These are wonderful ways to, you know, navigate a country and get across it. But it's a very different, almost by definition, the slowing down really can only happen on your feet walking at a walking pace.
I think maybe slowing down might not mean going slowly, but more finding one's own pace. And for some people, it might be slightly faster. For some other, maybe so, maybe slower. We do have a lot of people that associate doing more with having a greater journey. Oh, can I walk 30 kilometers per day? Can I walk 35 kilometers per day so that I can see more? And I suppose there is the risk that they don't slow down altogether because they are adding that pace to.
I think there's an important point, Umberto. I think we each have to find our own pace. One of the first Caminos I did it with a very fit, my best man, and he was very fit, walking at a pace that I couldn't keep up with. I tried to for some days and eventually was forced to stop because I was very close to a foot fracture. Because of the pace and the hammering. So that was a very valuable lesson to me early on. These, we have to walk, you know, we have to walk at our own pace, a pace that suits our body and suits our mind. And we, you know, we need to establish that. And if that means, you know, parting company with somebody you're walking with or whatever, then that's, so be it. I mean, one of the most, the deepest pilgrimage I went on, I spent 2 weeks at the ashram of a man called Thich Nhat Hanh. He's on the Vezere route, or he has a community there in Plum Village. And I spent 2 weeks and hit the, what he does, this wonderful Buddhist monk, the community walk silence, in silence. That's their sort of discipline every day. And walking really slowly, I mean, you know, and just looking at everything as you pass by, it's incredible what extra things you see. And I walked out from that walking community, meditation, walking meditation, onto the Camino, and the experience was absolutely incredible. I was really in an altered state for much of the time because I just was not trapped by this pressure to get anywhere and or to be anywhere. It was a wonderful experience. Now, we, you know, in our busy lives, not all of us can have the luxury of that, but we can, all of us, slow down our life or present to the passing moments that arise. And then, but, you know, I was asked once how, I asked somebody, how could I, when I walk these Caminos and I write about them when I come back, how is it, and I haven't got a particularly good memory, but I can record absolutely everything that happened on each day, even if last year or years ago. I can even tell you the bird song and the shape of the clouds. How is that? And somebody passed this, which I think is probably very true. She said to me, well, she said, it sounds as though you were totally present. You were 100% present to what you were doing. So by definition, you retain it. It's only when my mind is clicking on about, oh, you know, did I do the bank transfers? Have I done something that I sort of passed through 10 miles of landscape, and I might have been as well walking around my back garden at home, because I it was all a blur to me. I didn't take it in. So I think becoming present, 100% present to each moment, is a beautiful experience, and it's something that very few of us do very little of the time.
Yeah, and that actually leads me on to the next question. It's how do you think we can slow down even when we're not on the Camino, when we're at home? I mean, people are trying to do more work in less time, mind the children, teach piano lessons, I don't know, loads of things. So what's your take on that?
Well, but again, it's a lovely question, because we have to learn how to bring the experience of the Camino home with us. We can't just live it. Well, funny enough, I live half the year in the Camino, but not everybody writes guidebooks about it. So we have to learn the slowing down techniques, that practice of walking slowly and mindfully in from moment to moment in the present. We have to try and bring that back into our everyday lives. Otherwise, you know, really, what purpose is it if every, you know, 3 years we go off on a Camino and that's the only time in the 3 years we're calm and walking mindfully? So that requires discipline and it requires a practice. Now, I have a practice. I don't often follow it, but, you know, every hour I try and get up from the computer and, you know, rest my eyes and, you know, take a brief walk or take some deep breaths. Now, having said that, it sounds, oh, well, that's a good idea. Now, if I'm busy and I'm inspired by something that I'm doing, or I'm in a conversation, or I'm talking to you here, you know, hours can pass and I find that I've forgotten to do that. But then I don't beat myself up. I say, oh, I you know, I've missed my practice again. Well, now I'll try harder in the future. But I think we can all build in, but it does require discipline. It requires a practice to do it. But like anything else, you know, we're disciplined enough to go down to the pub in an evening, or disciplined enough to go and watch the news at 6 o'clock or whatever. Why can't we discipline ourselves just to have some quiet downtime and a few breaths?
I suppose what happens is that we have an infinity of opportunities for doing something, for reading something, or for being triggered by news, videos, sound, music. And I think in what you're saying, it's more, it is a question of taking back some control over it, whether it's every hour having a short, small walk or deep breathing and so on. It doesn't matter if we miss it, obviously, but at least you know that you can slow down. So then, as you were saying, it's more a question of discipline. And one thing I wanted to ask you, it's, I don't know if you've heard about the allegory of present, why present is called present. So the past is finished, it's past, mm-hmm. The future is coming ahead, and the present is a present that can, that is laying ahead of you. So that we need to appreciate it. I suppose there may be some links with mindfulness and living the moment.
Well, yes. I mean, there's a lovely phrase that, you know, why is it called a presence? And it, because it's a present from God.
Uh-huh.
I have that too. But coming into presence, there's a lovely website called Walking Into Presence by someone who's well, Nancy, who's well known on the Camino, and she runs this this website, which is helping us to, you know, to discipline ourselves on mobile phones and access. You know, maybe just have it in the, you know, at a certain time of the day or in the evening to touch in, but otherwise, while we're walking, have it switched off so that we can come more into that presence more mindfully. And that's Nancy Frey, who many people know. She's now based in Santiago. So there are, you know, again, there are tools available to us, if you, you know, go on the web and find them, as to how to slow down. And we get sort of hints and help to do that, and even have, you know, buddies who send us a message occasionally, say, you know, have you done your mindful walk today? So, or we can set that for ourselves. So we can use the technology to actually remind us to slow down. It doesn't need to capture us and take us over. We can use it wisely and market to give us a bell or a reminder, say, you know, you've been an hour now. Have you had some downtime?
Yeah. That's great. Okay. Anything else that you think people should know or should look forward to slowing down? Any other benefits you see?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, let's take the practice that we, many of us had in lockdown. You know, it's amazing the sort of the positive, there's a lot of negativities coming out of it, but a lot of the positive stuff is, gosh, you know, people hear constantly birdsong for the, or notice it for the first time, partly because the traffic's down, but, you know, partly because we are more mindful or more present. So use the experience and the beauty, because most of us, when we slow down and we become present, 100% present, in other words, when our minds are calm, let alone our bodies, where we've slowed down and we've now in a calm state, we love that place, because it's where we're, you know, we can look around and we can see the clouds and we can look at the insects and hear them, and it's a wonderful place to be, you know, calm and mindful. So let's use what we found over the past months to not go back, rush back to the busyness.
Very good. Thank you for that. John, I have a few pilgrims or future pilgrims questions that I would like to ask you. So we have Harry Delaney, who asked, as a fellow Irishman, asked John why he didn't write a book on the Camino del Norte. And I have another, Jorge Cortez, who asked the same question, actually.
Well, okay. I mean, there's quite a simple answer. Well, there's several answers, but the simple one is that when I started, I had a plan to write a guidebook on all of the various routes, but I hadn't realized that, they would be successful in the sense that people would want them, and therefore they would have to be updated constantly. So I'm finding myself, now I've written a book for the Camino in Vienna and the Camino San Andres. I've got the Portuguese routes, I've got the coastal routes, I've got the Inglés, the Finisterre, the Camino Francés, and all the alternative routes, because there's not just one route on the Camino Francés. Every day there's alternative routes, and they all have to be walked regularly by me to update them. So there's only one of me, so I can't. But the other reason, I did look at it, and I've walked the Camino Norte, I've walked all the main Caminos. But one of the problems with the Camino Norte to me is it's not just one route, there's actually four. There's the Camino de Santiago, there's the GR, I forget what it is now, the GR12, is it? There's the local routes, and then there's the routes which aren't marked at all, but which are along the beaches. And I've always wanted in the guidebooks to put, always have all the alternatives available, because a pilgrim really doesn't like coming to a place where they've got options and they don't know what the options are. So I think the success of the guidebooks is I say, tell them, if you go left, this is what you'll get. If you go right, this is what you'll get. If you go straight on, this is what you get. So not only to write that book, because it's four routes, not one, but to update it, and it's a long route, it's just too much space for me. And also, there aren't all that many people walking it. I mean, I know it's becoming more popular, but the numbers are probably, to make it, because I work through a commercial printer, a publisher, and he might say, well, John, how are you going to, why you ask me to publish this book? And I say, well, because you've got lots of these other books and they're successful, can you do this? And to some extent he has, he sponsored the Camino in Vienna. There's only 72 people walked there, he wasn't very happy taking that book, but hopefully in time it would become popular. So I think that's enough reasons to say that I there's only one of me.
Very good. And I would like to ask you two other questions. One is about the Camino Primitivo, Phil Fennis from the American Pilgrims Camino Group, who asked, I've completed the French way, the Portuguese way, considering the Camino Primitivo next. I understand that there are shorter distances, but more difficult and tramping. He's interested in your insight on how much more difficult would the Camino Primitivo compare to the French way or the Portuguese way?
Oh, well, I mean, I think it's much more difficult. I mean, I think, what the The advantage of the Commune Française, and no doubt that is why it has, you know, 60, more than half of all the prisons and all the Caminos walking it, is because literally every 4 or 5 kilometers you have a bar, you have a cafe, you have an albergue, a hostel, a hotel. So, you know, anybody of any physical capability can do it. You can do it in wheelchairs, you can do it on horseback, you could, you know, there's... It's available for that. And you've got all the facilities there to help people, like, you know, massage people and foot hospitals and clinics and all that sort of thing. So any of these alternative routes, especially something like the Primitivo or the Via de la Plata or these more remote routes, you've got the much bigger distance between facilities, whether that be restaurants or places to stay. You've got far fewer people on it to help you if you run into a problem. You know, the facilities just aren't there. And that's part of their beauty, is that, you know, people wanting a more sort of quieter, more reflective time, walk them for that reason. So I think that, yes, they're, it's very different experiences. So you, to tackle these other routes, like the Primitivo, you really need to be what I would call an experienced walker. You need to be able to understand maps, and have a certain resilience to cope with long distances and bad weather and events if they hit you, because you've got nobody else who's going to pick you up and help you.
Yeah, you might be a bit further than further from the nearest road that than on the French way or the Portuguese way.
Very much so. Yes,
fortunately or unfortunately, that's just the landscape. Great. I have a last question for you, or it's more thought. We have Stacey Heard, who's asking, how can pilgrims play a role in protecting the trail, its environment, maybe reducing waste? And maybe also a secondary question from that is, how can they help volunteering or other ideas to give back, I suppose?
Well, I think we can help, every pilgrim can help every day. And I have a discipline, which I do every day. On every route I go on, I always make sure that I pick up some rubbish as I go along the place. And I pick it up, you know, in a sense of gratitude, not in a case of superiority. I particularly love it when I find a plastic bag blowing in the wind, because that will be, I use that then to pick up the rest. I stop at picking up human waste, and unfortunately there's far too much of that around the place. And I do think that I have to be careful as a sort of a man. It can be easier for the males, but, you know, we need to be very mindful of, you know, leaving things like tissues around the place. And if we have a weak bladder, or we can't, you know, we tend not to be able to make it to the next cafe or whatever, we're not plan our day to do that, then we need to bring a sort of a plastic bag with us and be able to dispose of our own waste, particularly our human waste, when we come into town or to a rubbish bin or whatever. So that's one thing. And then the other thing I would say, and that's we could all help out on that every single day. If all of us left that route, not just the same as we found it, but better than we found it, we would keep the Caminos beautifully clean. And the other thing is, but be careful, but don't get a superiority sense, because that leads me to the other rubbish that we can leave around the place, and that's psychic waste. Psychic waste is energetic waste, and it's for real. You know, when we shout and scream and rant and rave at somebody and curse, that leaves a residue of a negative energy. And that negativity is something that also is rubbish that we leave behind. So we need to be very careful about making sweeping judgments of either, you know, individual pilgrims, or has somebody, or they've come on a bus or whatever, whatnot. We really, really, really need not to leave that rubbish on the Camino. And every time that we do, because, you know, barking dogs always a bit of a, I tend to be in a sort of a quiet meditative place, and suddenly a dog comes from nowhere, and I let go some horrendous expletives. But I'm now disciplined, because that's my sort of natural sort of fight reaction. But now what I do, as quickly as I can afterwards, I sort of clean it up and say, you know, I'm sorry, dog, you're only doing what dogs do. And so I tidy up as much as I can my own psychic waste as I go. So be mindful, please, of both those things.
Very good. I think for those people looking at how to improve the trail, there are some principles that Follow the Camino encourage people to do, which are called the Leave No Trace movement, where a bit like what John was saying, is that whenever you are walking the Camino or walking anywhere else, try to leave it better than how you found it.
Yes.
And just think that that little wrapper of chocolate bar might be you that you dropped by mistake or a bit of a wind blow. So it might not just be a reckless behavior. We all make that mistake. So given the amount of people, if we can all pick one plastic bottle, one plastic bag or anything like this, this is how you can help on that.
I think so.
That's great. Well, John, look, thanks very much for your time for today. This was really, really interesting. I hope that our viewer and listeners will like the video, thumbs up and subscribe, and I'll let you go until the next time. Thank you very much, John.
Okay, Umberto, slow down.
Thank you.
Now.